If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
We carried you in our arms on Independence Day, and now you throw us all aside, yeah, and put us on our way. Oh, what dear daughter, 'neath the sun.
That's a good point.
I'm just explaining to Nicholas Hirsch my rationale for playing Joan Baez Sings Bob Dylan, that, you know, if you have a favorite, listen to him. I heard too many people say, oh man, I haven't heard Prince in like 15 years, and now he's gone and you're not going to hear any more from him. Can I call you Nick or Nicholas, or what do you prefer? You're the assistant conductor of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, so maybe Nicholas is
more Nick is perfectly fine. But good. Actually, now it's associate conductor.
Is it really?
I got a little promotion.
What does that mean?
That's a very good question. Sometimes
does it mean more money?
A little bit, maybe. Okay. But it's more about the responsibilities involved. The assistant conductor is usually, his primary duty is sort of an understudy conductor, covering all the rehearsals and concerts in case, God forbid, anything were to happen to the
right.
to the conductor hired for the week. But my duties now involve more conducting. I'm going to be starting next season the music director of the youth orchestra for the Baltimore Symphony. And doing a lot more family concerts, educational shows, that kind of thing.
You also do, and one of the, Nick's father, Phil, is one of the legendary sports writers in this town and is still writing like crazy. He may be the world's leading Olympics expert and authority, and he'll be in Rio doing that. I miss him. He took what was called the buyout from the Tribune to have a little more freedom and flap his wings in other places. But we worked together at the Daily News and then at the Tribune. That is not the reason this kid is on the show. The reason is he is doing a program. It may be other symphony orchestras are doing this thing. We're going to spend the whole hour with Nick. This Pulse program, which meshes indie rock notables. These are not stumble bums from the Baltimore club scene. These are notables.
Absolutely.
With the symphony. And it's my understanding, tell me I'm wrong, the symphony will play a number, the indie band will play a number, and then they will kind of collaboratively create something else.
That's it in a nutshell, for sure.
Are other symphonies doing this?
Well, I think most symphonies are exploring ways to connect with
with
the
people.
Same target demographic we're trying to connect with for this as well, which is my generation, the sort of 20 to 35 range millennials, people who have, in some cases, people might say classical music education has sort of missed out on. So people who are fond of these indie bands, who don't know that they could be fond of great classical music, but just need the introduction.
Why is that? I think to myself that, is it simply a lack of exposure? Because it's much like, I've had the same problem in trying to convince people that poetry is not dull, but you were taught poetry in a way, generally, in public schools, that it's, well, memorize this and memorize that. And what is, without the meaning, without the flow, without the art, and without the music of poetry, when you were in grammar school, what did you know about classical music?
Well,
when did you start playing the cello?
I started playing the cello when I was 8 years old, but I knew of classical music pretty much my whole life because both my parents, I went to the first, my first production of an opera when I was about probably 5 or 6 years old, The Magic Flute at the Lyric. So it was, for me, it was simply because my parents had it playing in the house, so I had that exposure.
That's lucky. That was lucky.
For others,
can you generalize, Nick? Even around here, you went to school here. You went to Evanston Township High School. The ways in which young people are introduced to classical music seem to me there seems to be something wrong with it. Am I right, or is that
we're missing something? Certainly, there's, and that's I think we're. In the symphony business, we're often kind of scrambling to find what's the right solution, both to fix the gaps that exist in older generations now, my generation
right.
specifically, as well as find the vaccine to correct that going forward.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, in terms of specifically, I think we lack the focus on arts and music in our public school system that would really open people's ears and brains to the love that I had.
You know, and I'm sure you're disgusted as I am about it, but when a budget crunch comes, the most expendable thing to everybody seems to be the arts.
Of course it is.
Oh no, we don't need painters, we don't need musicians, we don't need. And I think that is a grand tragedy.
It absolutely is.
That is afflicting. I don't know what the Baltimore school system's like, but it's got to be. The public school system's got to be in a crunch.
There's a lot of problems in Baltimore generally right now in the public school system, so, of course. But we at the Baltimore Symphony, though, have tried in a very strong way, have taken steps to correct that with a program called ORCIDS, where it's an after-school program, voluntary for school kids in the underserved parts of Baltimore, West Baltimore.
Oh, how great! What do you do?
It's based on the Venezuelan system, the famous El Sistema, which is the sort of state-mandated music education program, taking some of the fundamental ideals and programs from that and implementing it in a way for after school that it takes that time from when school gets out to when the parents can actually come back to pick up the kids, and it gives them something meaningful and creative to do in that time and builds both their musicianship and also builds something that's purely in their soul, I think.
Yeah.
That's really what music and the arts has to offer. And I think we would really focus on that as a core curriculum in all levels of school, we would not only see a market improvement in terms of audiences for classical music,
of course.
But we'd also see just more creativity, more imagination.
No question.
Into
science. I could not agree with you more.
And the ORCIDS program, really, it's training these kids to be leaders, to be real fundamental people in their community at a time when those communities need people like that, need leaders, need creative souls.
I don't want you, before we take a little break, Nick Hirsch, to generalize too much, but it just sounds like you're on here because of this Pulse thing, which we will get to, which I found is incredibly intriguing. Is the Baltimore Symphony more progressive, would you say, because of its environment, because of the state of Baltimore? Is it, I know it's a tough question to answer. Is it, more progressive, more interesting, more innovative than Chicago Symphony, or it's got to be up there. Just the two things, Pulse and this thing, sound innovative and important.
I think the challenges of Baltimore have necessitated this sort of progressive feeling. I think we need to. In order to engage our audience, to engage our community in a meaningful way, we have to do these kinds of things.
That's great. Good for you. Absolutely. My guest is Nick Hirsch, a proud product of Evanston Township High School, the son of a great friend and a great talent, Phil Hirsch, who you will be reading probably everywhere, but you used to read him in the Chicago Tribune. We're going to continue on. You're going to hear a bit of Bohemian Rhapsody as orchestrated, arranged by, what did you do with it?
Both.
Yeah, and I'm going to find out. In the next 15 minutes, I'm going to talk to him about how you start playing cello at 8 and then how you become a underpaid, maybe, classical musician in this day and age.
Spoke of life most free from slavery, with eyes that showed no trace of misery.
Okay, enjoy. That's a great, great, great CD. That is Baez Sings Dylan. She is 75. He is 74. So please appreciate them while they're still alive and kicking and performing. My guest, Nick Hirsch, is the associate conductor of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. He's 27. He's a product of Evanston Township High School. You picked up a cello at 8 because?
Because I had a love for classical music, thanks to my parents.
Yeah, that's nice.
I have musicians in the family. On my dad's side, my cousin is also a cellist, and and certainly was at the time I was, you know, in my formative years.
Yeah. You're still in your formative years. Don't kid yourself.
And I was lucky enough in my elementary school in the third grade that there was a little assembly where they brought in a sort of show-and-tell fashion various instruments of the orchestra, and especially not just band instruments but string instruments or custom instruments. And it was a little Goldilocks moment for me. I heard the violin, and I thought, too high. I heard the bass, and I thought, that's way too big and too low. And I said, the cello seems just right.
It is never, and you know better than anyone, I once thought that I could naturally play the cornet. Mm-hmm. And I rented one, and I couldn't play at all, and I didn't have what it takes to follow through on that. It's never easy. You have to be very, very determined. Your parents never pressured you and said, take lessons or this. You wanted this.
Well, I would say once, yeah.
They nurtured me.
I came to them wanting to play the cello, for sure. The good sticklers my parents are, once I started down the path, they made sure that I kept up with the practice, that I was prepared for every lesson, and you know, how it helped me through the times when I was, you know, potentially on the cusp of just quitting altogether.
But
then buckling back down and
how good are you? How good are you
on the cello?
Yes.
I was okay. I'm not as thoroughly in practice these days because I just have too much to do in my day job.
A career in classical music is always fascinating because there are a variety of ways to go, and everybody thinks the only thing to do is play and go to a symphony orchestra, go to a small symphony orchestra, and go to a bigger symphony orchestra, and then get, you know, a seat at the CSO. Tell me about your career arc here.
Well,
where'd you go to college?
I went to college at Stanford.
Okay. Did you study music?
I did. I went to Stanford knowing that I was going to study music for sure. Stanford being the wonderful place that it is, opened the possibility for other paths should I have chosen to embark upon them. As it ended up, I didn't choose to. I stuck with music and purely music as my major. But that was a great education. Fashion. So
sure.
And I think, well, it's certainly at Stanford that nurtured my love for conducting, for sure. And I took my first conducting lessons there. And by the end of my 4 years there, I was applying to grad school for conducting. And at that point, I got after a long and sometimes bitter process, I finally got into Indiana University, the Jacobs School of Music, which is a very,
very good
fine music school generally, and one of the finest conducting programs there is in the States, at least in my very biased
opinion. Sure. And it's a beautiful campus, too. It's, very, it's a beautiful
it's
campus.
True. Yeah.
And you got out of that and then started – and then you just – I know it sounds – you start sending letters to symphonies?
Well, and it's a more structured process these days. In the old days, that was you could, in some cases, just show up at a symphony, meet a conductor, and maybe play the piano for them, and say, and if they liked you, then they'll say, you know, come be my assistant. But nowadays, it's a very regimented thing where you have to send a resume, and you're always sending videos. You're always sending.
Of course, that's a day and age. Of course, this is what I look like. This is how I play.
Basically,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. That's not a bottle of Jack Daniels next to me. Yeah, I get
right,
it. Yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So you have to go through that process and.
So was the BSO, the Baltimore, the first, your first conducting job? Is that?
That's correct. Well, the first major symphony orchestra.
Wow.
That I was lucky enough to land a job at, yeah.
That does seem pretty lucky.
It was,
not that you're undeserving, I mean, but it seems like a very nice place to be.
For a first job out of school, I couldn't imagine a better one. There is always a factor of luck in this career, and you
sure.
just have to be in the right place at the right time, and if you're not, it may just not have been your time.
Yeah.
There's always the factor of working hard and studying up and you know making sure you're prepared. And of course the final stage of any of these application processes is the audition itself, where you actually get in front of the orchestra.
Of course.
And I had a good audition, and everything seemed to fall into place, and it was just happened to be my lucky day that day.
Wow. And it's also the other advantage to this, Nick, I think, is that Baltimore is such an interesting place.
Absolutely it is.
It is so of its time in this country and in the problems that this country is facing, but also, I think, in the potential of cities.
It absolutely is. It's an incredibly vibrant place in terms of its art scene. It's a very sort of center stage place to be these days where you're seeing a lot of the intrinsic problems in our country come to a very visible fore.
Well, and I think somewhat the same thing of Detroit, but a little more beleaguered. Mm-hmm. But there's so much ambition there. It reminds me of Chicago Post. I'm dead serious. Mm-hmm. Post the Great Chicago Fire, where there are all these possibilities. This
sure.
is where,
yeah.
ladies and gentlemen, the skyscraper exactly. was invented simply as a result of the freedoms. We're going to take a break. When we come back after a couple commercials and then the news, you're going to hear the talent of my guest, Nick Hirsch, in his Bohemian Rhapsody. He will tell you how this came to be. It's actually his Bohemian Rhapsody. I didn't pull this off the internet. I did pull it off the internet, but his dad sent it to me. Then we're going to play you a bit of to talk about the next Pulse concert coming up. I'll get a little more detail from Nick about what these are, because I think it's a great idea. The next one is the 28th, if you're going to be in Baltimore. But they sell out, don't they? They're selling.
And they also stream them through a
Oh, man, you guys are so lucky. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Nick Hirsch, as you've been listening to, is the associate conductor of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. We are going to talk in a momentarily about one of his – he does a lot of stuff there, but one of them is – you're in charge of Pulse, mm-hmm. right? But at first I want to listen to your lovely father, the great sports writer Phil Hirsch, sent me a clip, because all fathers are proud of their kids. And Phil, I will reciprocate it once Fiona is older than 11. I'll send you something that she's done. But I appreciate this. Tell me about something. We can't hear the whole thing because it will take up too much time. But what's this Bohemian Rhapsody? I certainly know the song, and I'm sure everybody listening knows it.
So it started off as I was looking for a tune to arrange as an encore for a very specific purpose. It was an encore to a viola concerto, so it had a solo viola player as well as an orchestra. And I was looking for something fun to do. And as I recall, they were running an ad at that time that featured Bohemian Rhapsody. And I said, wow, that'd be a great tune. And so I sat down to arranging it. Someone posted the video of the time we performed it live at this concert. And it started to go a little bit viral.
Oh, fantastic.
And so the university had us actually professionally record it. And I think that's the version you have here.
All right, we're going to listen to just a couple minutes of it. But this is Nick Hirsch taking on Bohemian Rhapsody. Folks, email me, rcogan@tribune.com. I will send you the whole version, okay? Do that, because I'd love to listen to it. It's really, really beautiful. Do you know, Nick, when you've done something that is really good? You know, I think of your dad and me as writers, and we know, okay, well, that is a great piece, and we know it. And sometimes it's like, okay, that's the best I can do today. Do you have that same thing as a musician?
I get that feeling for sure. And sometimes it's true and sometimes it's false positive.
No kidding. Yeah. No kidding. All right, let's talk about Pulse.
Sure.
Pulse started, this is its second year, right?
Mm-hmm. No, this is the first year, actually.
This is the first year?
That's right.
All right, how did this start? Whose idea was it? And I know I've sort of defined the idea, but you can do a better job.
No, sure. My partner in this project, the executive producer of it, a guy named Toby Blumenthal, he was the director of rentals at our home, the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall in Baltimore. And he would basically get in touch with these bands who wanted to use the Meyerhoff as a space to perform.
Sure.
But he was sort of flummoxed at the fact that these bands would come and do their own thing. And meanwhile, the orchestra would either be not doing anything or be off doing their own thing. And so he was looking for a place to get them to do something together. And so he came to me with this sort of general concept, and we went back and forth. We banged it out. And then in partnership with a grant from the Wallace Foundation, we used this idea as a springboard to reach the millennial audience, which is exactly what the Wallace Foundation is all about. They give grants to extend the reach of arts institutions to specific demographics.
Well, it is also what every arts institution is banging their heads against the proverbial wall trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. I mean, and newspapers too. I mean, that's, you guys are what everybody wants. So when you approached the members of the symphony orchestra, mm-hmm. how'd they feel about it?
Well, I feel like with any new project, there are the musicians, some management too, are always tentative about taking
sure.
a new novel concept. But with a very strong proposal with the backing of the Wallace Foundation grant, it seemed like it would the thing had legs. It seemed like it was a we were going to make every effort to keep things not kitschy, to keep things very much geared toward keeping it a very collaborative experience for both the band and the members of the orchestra involved, which is often a problem when we do pops concerts, as we call them, that feature some kind of frontlining act. Often the orchestra plays very much a backseat role in terms of just holding notes for an indeterminate amount of time. And in this case, we really wanted to have the orchestra be as much of a feature in these concerts as these headlining
bands. How did you pick the headlining bands?
Well, my partner in this, Toby, because of his knowledge of
he knew them and
he knew all of these bands. He has a really great ear for finding bands that really have a voice, that a really true.
I'm
going to
play some
voice.
Of the. You have turned me on to two of what will become my new favorite bands, Lone Bellow, and the other one that has one name, Dawes. I've listened to both of these and think they're great. One of the things that people don't seem sometimes to understand is that musicians are not, they don't cubbyhole themselves. Classical musicians appreciate, they're not ghettoized. They appreciate other kinds of music in the same way that a country rock band would appreciate a symphony orchestra. Music levels that playing field. It's a language that all of these people understand and get. Am I making too much of this?
No, I mean, as long as the musicianship is truly honest.
Exactly.
As long as people are there performing in a real, honest, human way, which is sometimes you can get a little bit sort of a robotic feel from especially some of the more quote-unquote mainstream artists.
Yeah, right.
With indie bands, which we have sort of geared ourselves toward with this series, they really bring their own voice, their own true musicianship, and something meaningful to offer.
It's a four-part series.
Yeah,
Pulse?
We do four concerts.
You have done three, and the fourth is
correct.
Coming up.
Correct.
What's been the feeling of the musicians?
Again, they were skeptical coming into the first concert, and then after the first concert, I think even amongst themselves, they started to realize this is cool. This is something that
tell your pal out there. It is a great, great idea. You guys will select something for then the symphony to play. Symphony plays first, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Then do you edit? Then the band free to do anything they want?
The band comes up with a set that they play by themselves. They're free to construct that themselves, and then for the grand finale, in prior discussions with the band that we have, we decide on a couple of usually of their own tunes that we'll do together, and I'll usually do the arrangements. Sometimes we'll have, for instance, with one band, they had actually worked with a composer previously to create orchestra and band charts for them, so. But we decide on a couple of tunes to do together in a very collaborative setting. And the other thing, too, is that there's a lot. This is not your typical concert either way. It's not a typical classical concert. It's not a typical rock concert. So there's no intermission. It runs top to bottom with a couple of pauses maybe, but there's a lot of talking. There's a lot of interaction. I'm doing a lot of talking in terms of trying to contextualize what people are hearing on the classical orchestral side, as well as doing a little panel with members of the band. So there's always something going on stage.
How can people here listen to this?
So we have partnered with a radio station to make this possible too, in Baltimore, WTMD. And they both live broadcast the concerts as well as stream them online. So if you go to WTMD.org, for instance, this Thursday at
Elif, can you take this down and put it up somewhere? Because I know you're a very, you're a young, classically trained musician too. I mean, this must be very appealing to you. So we'll do that, and we'll let these, you know, let people listen.
Yeah.
Live stream, I'm sure you can get it after the fact, too.
Actually, that's the one thing we can't do. So you do have to tune in at 8:30 this coming Thursday, the 28th, in order to catch this concert, because in our copyright agreements, we can't.
Gotcha. You know, no trouble. Let's take a short break and come back, and I will play you a bit of the band that you can hear on another radio station, whatever night this is, the 28th. This is such a great idea. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This has been a revelation to be here with Nick Hirsch. I probably would have had him on even if he was wanted to talk about playing tiddlywinks, because he is the son of a dear friend of mine and great writer, Phil Hirsch, but he has been a revelation, and I think in many ways, Nick, you've been inspiring, I hope, to listeners, certainly to me. I mean, this what you're doing with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra on a number of different levels, but especially with this Pulse series. Here, ladies and gentlemen, why don't you have a listen to the band that we'll be playing this week with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra in a collab. They'll be playing alone, but they'll be in a collaborative venture. This is a new band that, thanks to Nick Hirsch, I now love. Lone Bellow, this song is called You Never Need Nobody.
Your affection, and all I ever do is wrong. You could break a heart in your sleep. Get the way you move makes a grown man weep. They all your door saying, please, please, I can't take no more. Yeah, you never need nobody. You never been alone. And I try to get your affection. With your tone, yeah, the way you sing makes a mockingbird. The grass you walk on gives way. Say you please, please come back this way.
That is a band that's going to be on stage this week with the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, collaborating, sharing their mutual joy of music, very different kinds of music, but at base, same kind of music, because it's music. Nick Hirsch has been in here. He's got about five more minutes to talk to me. This is a great place you seem to be at 27, with a very, you know, sort of adventuresome symphony orchestra. Mm-hmm. As the associate conductor, you are in charge of, sort of in charge collaboratively again, in
right.
charge of Pulse.
I'm called the co-curator, but yeah, I have a lot of artistic input in terms of what how this project evolves.
How do you find, Nick? How do you find, forgetting music for a moment, how do you find Baltimore?
I love Baltimore. I always joke it's my ancestral home. My mom's family is from Baltimore. My mom was born there. That's where she met my dad when he was working for the newspaper out there. Yeah,
Baltimore Sun.
Baltimore
probably,
Sun, right, yeah.
Yeah. H.L. Mencken's paper, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And so we still have very good family friends there.
Oh, home.
And I've been going periodically in my childhood, so it sort of it felt weirdly like a homecoming to end up moving and working there. Vibrant city.
I will now move this from being a lucky thing for you to being a miracle.
Fateful.
Some kind of miracle. Some kind of miracle of sorts. You were at, as someone 27, I am sure that you would like one day to look out at that audience and see more and more 28-year-olds and 29-year-olds and 30-year-olds. This pulse, do you think it nurtures in someone? It does introduce them to collect. If they've only seen bars and bands and they're coming to see the Lone Bellow, they're listening to the orchestra. Do you think it's nurturing or sparking a seed? It's certainly removing the intimidation factor that might be there, don't you think?
Absolutely. That's definitely part of it, yeah. Yeah, we try to do that at every possible turn. It's from the original programming of these concerts, we're very careful to curate a piece of classical music, for instance, in this case, Appalachian Spring with
right.
The Lone Bellow, because they share a common core. They share something innately musically that if you like The Lone Bellow, then you will like Appalachian Spring because they share the same roots. So we try to do that for every band to find something that's not alienating, to find something
not intimidating.
Exactly. And something that people can immediately relate to and then hopefully nurture that newfound love when they go home. I mean, this is a sort of ongoing process where we're very much focused on trying to see the people who come to our Pulse concerts also maybe come back for one of our regular subscription concerts. I mean, that's the end goal here
With this thing, Pulse seems to hook. That'll hook some people.
Correct.
And then you have to keep them, and then you have to nurture them, and then you have to let them swim off
Absolutely.
Into the world of symphony orchestras.
Right.
A fantastic thing. I'm so taken with this. I'm not sure it's ever going to happen here, but you never know where you're going. I don't think you should leave Baltimore in a while, because it just seems like, and this place for you seems like such a wonderfully creative, nurturing place for you.
It absolutely is, and I'm definitely going to be there another 2 years at least. Anyway,
good, so. Good.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get you back here one day. Take over the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
Well, that's a
yes. Give me
a
job.
Way off,
give me a job as a triangle player. I mean, I'm like, how hard could that be?
Yeah, but actually, a little bit harder than you may
oh,
think.
Oh no, I know, no. Of course, I'm not thinking. Wait a minute, that's got to be like some kind of old-fashioned political job. Like, hey, get a lifetime job playing the triangle in the symphony. Nick, it's really a pleasure to meet you. Give your dad, Phil Hirsch, you'll be reading him a lot when the Olympics hits Rio, because he is, I think, without argument, the most knowledgeable writer for newspapers or whatever else people read about the Olympics. He's been doing it for a long time, and he's a wonderful, sophisticated guy. How many languages does he speak? He's good at French.
French, Italian, a little bit, some Spanish in there too, but French definitely.
Yeah, I know he speaks French. Well, Phil, you and your wife did a really good job. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I don't. I'm the only one.
Only child. All of their pride gets laid on you. It's really a pleasure to meet you, Nick, and I think this is great. And keep in touch and keep me posted on the BSO's adventures, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. We'll be back next week, unless there's some kind of I don't think they're going to have Sunday night playoff games. I'm assuming the Hawks are going to win Monday and then move on. Yeah, your father says so.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Adam Phillips, you're the greatest engineer in the world. Elif Garris was a great producer today, her first time. So, see you next week. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It's 11 o'clock. Carl Amari is coming up.